I'm Stargate Pioneer from the Starling Tribune, a podcast member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the one you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual. Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready, because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
Gallifrey Public Radio, the podcast dedicated to everything Doctor Who. Join us each week for discussion ranging from Hartnell to Capaldi. I'm your host, Jay Witten.
I prefer to jazzercise my demons, but yeah.
And my co-host, Haley Malley.
I am a ray of sunshine.
And Keir Hansen.
Flashy lights, Christmas, woo!
Spoilers.
We will be discussing news and rumors, as well as episodes that have already aired. But don't worry, if we get into anything too serious, we'll warn you again.
Welcome to episode 162 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where evidence has just been discovered of a podcast crew that disappeared from the internet 3 years ago, leaving only the files of their final broadcast. Apparently, a sentient form of earwax emerged from beneath their headphones, throttling them to violent deaths and taking over the microphones in a sinister plan to flood the web with yet another Doctor Who podcast. Hello, GPR.
A legend is born.
I wonder where the hell we came from.
Or a legend is killed. I'm your host, Haley Malley, and with me in the studios this week, we have Jay Witten. How are you today, Jay?
I'm a hell of a lot better now that I don't have to watch this episode again.
Never again. And Keir Hansen, how are you today, Keir?
I'm rested and recovered from Long Island.
I can't even say that much yet. Jeez.
The hangover's finally wearing off.
You'll get there. Well, this week, we get to see what happens when Mark Gatiss draws elements from found footage horror films like The Blair Witch Project and Paranormal Activity, and then merges them with a little bit of Neil Gaiman's Sandman mythos, spends a little bit of time playing some first-person shooter games, and then pulls an unexpected conclusion from Japanese thriller Ringu, or The Ring, before deciding to present viewers with Sleep No More as the 9th episode of Series 9 and our first standalone episode that we've had to date. And in short, that's a baby. very divisive episode. In fact, I can't even say divisive because it's really, there are three poles. You know, people that really enjoyed the edginess and the chances that it took, breaking format. Some people that just didn't care for it at all because they either didn't follow it or didn't want that sort of an episode at any point bleeding into Doctor Who in general. And some folks that just said, well, you know, is what it is. Wait for next week. And just kind of let it go.
Yeah.
But it seems like one of those poles is more crowded than the other two.
Yes.
That's for sure, yeah.
Yeah. Well, here's one of the things that I wanted to try to take a look at, because I was really kind of struggling with this, was to try to determine whether it followed any of the formats of conventional episodes insofar as having an A story and B story, or potentially more. And if there was a B story going on in this, underneath the mystery of the Morpheus Project and the sentient Sandman, I'm not really sure exactly what it might have been.
I don't know. I feel like they might have started to try to do a B story with the grunts and what they are, but then they just didn't do it.
Right. That's kind of where I was headed too, because that was a bit of the established world that Gatiss was putting together here with, you know, dropping us, what, 38th century?
Is that where we were? Yeah, 38th century. On a Tuesday.
Yeah, on a Tuesday, by the taste of it. And giving us this idea of this Indo-Japanese cultural merger, which had some kind of interest to it. The fact that it has become sort of a scientific, military, religious state, you know, like their communications all have to do with, you know, may the gods watch over you or may the gods be with you. So it's just, that's an interesting kind of pull together. But in doing so, I think, as you said, Haley, there's like things that were set up that could have been interesting to pursue that never got a chance to be played with. And I don't necessarily think we're going to get an opportunity on this again. That's something else I want to talk to you guys about based on some feedback that we had gotten. But if that's the case, and we don't have something between like with the crew members, because, well, they all died. But even within their point, like, you know, Chopra and his and the pursuit of Deep Ando and that kind of thing, I'm not really sure if we had a B story really going there. So it was all focused on this one line throughout, and that line itself doubled back on it many times, which I guess is what left a lot of people kind of head scratching a bit.
Well, you know, that's something that the Doctor points out, you know, in the episode, is he kind of brings up, he's like, you know, why did the gravity shields fail? You know, why is this going on? Why is it everything happening at these weird spots? It's almost like somebody's doing it just for effect. Like, there's really no point to anything that's going on except for shock value. You know, and then as it goes on, we find out that that's exactly what was going on.
Right. It does have a lot of meta elements to it from Gatiss's writing perspective. You know, he sets you up on multiple instances to say, you know, either this is going to be confusing, this doesn't make sense, you really shouldn't be here, you shouldn't be watching this. You know, he lays all this stuff out for you to give you a warning that, yeah, there's going to be some very unusual takes and some unusual chances taken within this episode. And that's definitely true, but I guess it just didn't sit well with a lot of viewers, ourselves included, from first blush.
Right. From this point forward, anytime Mark Gatiss, you know, tells me about one of his scripts at the very beginning, says you should not watch this, I'm just going to take his word for it.
Hmm. Well, what about the scare factor? Because this was worked up to be a straight up horror episode. Yeah.
Right. I think they use the found footage style as kind of a crutch. That storytelling format lends itself to creating tension, but the story itself didn't have those elements.
Would it have worked better if they had followed more of a traditional filming format for it?
No, I think it would have been even weaker without the found footage style, because that's what gave a lot of the scare to it, was that you were kind of in there and running around with the characters. And without that, I don't know if there would have been any tension at all.
Okay. There is the issue of the pseudoscience.
Mm-hmm.
Which is probably what I kept kind of bumping into. I could have taken the found footage aspect of it, because I do appreciate some of those, like Chronicle and some of the other, and even some TV series that have played with that before. I'm trying to remember the name of the Supernatural episode with the werewolves and things. They went through that route, but it was entertaining in that regard too. But I guess it was the again, and we've talked about this before, there's that risk with pseudoscience. You know, explain too much of it and your brain's going to continue to want to take it apart.
It starts to fall apart. Yeah.
Don't give me any of it and I'll focus on other things, because I haven't been given that thread to pull. And I kind of feel with the Morpheus and the sleep boxes and that sort of thing that I was given a little bit too much to say, oh, wait a minute. So you, all right, I left, you know, some skin and some DNA in a box that is still inert, and it's a semi-sentient program and things. And at that point, my brain was off to the races. I'm like, wait a minute. This isn't like it's a primeval sludge in here that gets struck by lightning and all of a sudden my dead skin cells kind of like, I'm still wrestling with it. But, and here's the big thing, the giant eraser comes by in the final moments with Rasmussen saying there were no spores, there was no invasion. This is all actually the program out there doing what? I'm not exactly sure.
Turning people into carnivorous eye boogers.
No, but it's not, because they never existed. This is all happening within the heads and the dream states, I'm gathering, of the people who get infected by this program.
See, no, I understood it to be that there were no spores that caused the transformation. It was the program itself that caused the transformation.
Okay.
That's what I understood the last line to mean.
Well, yeah, the program is the thing that changed the chemistry of the brain and things like that to cause it to happen. But then he figured out how to put that into a video feed instead of actually in the pod.
So it's the body itself that serves as the life force It's not. It grows out from the body rather than that body, than that dust becoming sentient and capable and adaptable and apparently able to film footage.
Yeah.
Well, using a Wi-Fi signal, no less.
Well, yeah. Okay. Well. Okay. I understand the intent, and I applaud the risks taken, because this is definitely a lot of chances being taken. I'm just concerned that it all happened within one episode, and that's kind of like, you know, I look at it as like iterative development. If you're gonna try to make some changes and shake things up a little bit, you do them in increments, so that when things go right or things go wrong, you can point at it and say, okay, that worked, that didn't work. We can use that later. We can explore that later. If you change everything,
then you don't know what's working and what's not.
Correct. And that's kind of where I felt with this one. I'm better with it than I was in the first viewing. First viewing was really rough. But then again, I was overtired, probably drunk, notably drunk. Whatever excuses you want to put on it. But we were not alone. No, we were surrounded by 1,000 people that were having the same.
They all walked out just like, huh? What?
I mean, I heard people getting, like, almost violently angry about it. Like, more so than I was, which was shocking.
Yeah, and most of them were in our hotel room.
Yeah. Well, but that was it. It was those in a sort of a baffled state. Those that said, oh, I must have just missed something. I'm going to go back and rewatch it and figure out, because, you know, it's just, it all happened kind of quickly. And it's true. You do get a little bit more out of it on a rewatch, I think. But then again, that's probably because I'm going back and trying to figure out where breadcrumbs, sand crumbs, eye crumbs were being left for me along the way that I might have picked up on. And I just wasn't being clever enough, or whatever the case may be.
On repeat viewings, I feel like there were bits of dialogue that were fun, and, you know, the Doctor and Clara playing around, but the story still doesn't have enough meat to it to be enjoyable.
Yeah. So, yeah, I guess it's a matter of what you're in it to appreciate.
See, the thing is, it's that the idea behind it is a fantastic idea. You know, you create this thing that alters people's sleep state, and it, you know, turns them into monsters, and this is all done in a found footage style. It's like everything about that sounds like it could be really awesome, as it is with most Mark Gatiss scripts. He's always got a great idea. It's just so poorly executed, whether it's the story or there's a couple instances where it was just directing and things like that. It's somewhere it always falls apart, but there's always a great story element at the core of it. So I don't know. There was a lot here that I wanted to like, but 5 minutes in, I was already checked out. Yeah, there was no way to really draw me back in, because I was just already so over it.
Yeah, I guess this is definitely what I'm seeing here is Gatiss as the fan and the appreciator, because when he's writing for his Doctor and his companion, he's having a lot of fun with the dialogue. He's got the components of some things that should be able to work within the right construct, as you said, Jay, but because he's taking a lot of these chances, I think it's a matter of maybe spreading his efforts, his creative efforts a little thin, trying to or to sort of flip the analogy around, he's trying to jam it all in to one episode, and they don't quite blend. Because, you know, we sat through it going, okay, that feels like The Ring. Okay, now it looks like he's playing Doom. Mm-hmm. Okay, now that's, you know, oh, the sleep deprivation thing driving someone mad. Well, that was done back in the X-Files back in the 90s and you know, countless other Twilight Zone and what have you. So he's, I don't know if it's an homage or whether it's a collage of ideas that he wanted to get them all in because he's fascinated by them all and didn't have enough time or didn't have the stitching to make it really blend.
It just seemed like there was a lot that could have been done with this differently to make it a cohesive story, because in the end of it, it was just find out what's creating the monsters, and oh, it turns out to be a video, and then everything else was just fluff. There really wasn't anything else that needed to be told to get to the point of the story. So there was very little in the way of actual plot. It was all just, let's fill this up with some scary tension-building moments, put some people in danger, and then there's really nothing to hang your hat on at the end of it.
So it's like a variation of the lamp test where you can replace characters with a lamp, and if you still get the same story out of it.
Exactly.
I love lamp.
I love lamp. Well, let's look to that feedback, because we've been talking about it quite a bit, and the fact that, you know, we heard a wide spectrum of things. So what's some of the stuff that we actually did get back from our listeners on this one?
Well, Jonathan wrote and said, this episode really wasn't awful. It wasn't the best, but I've seen worse Doctor Who.
Yeah, very true. Wow.
I can't think of a modern episode that is worse than this one.
Jay did put Fear Her above this one.
Yeah.
Which you never thought you'd hear uttered.
No. I felt like a little piece of my soul died when I said it, but, you know.
But that's a matter of, again, it kind of goes back to what kind of story is it you're looking for? You're looking for something that says that, you know, Doctor Who's going to go on for another 50 years because we're taking huge risks and we're changing the format. Granted, you're doing that by grabbing formats from some other works, but it's new to this formula. Or is it, I still need a story at the bottom of all this, and you gave me a beginning and an end with no middle.
I like the cream in my Oreo, dang it.
Otherwise, it's just a bunch of crackers. Brian wrote in to say, you know, I like Gatiss as Mycroft. I love his personal passion for Doctor Who. Again, yeah, we've got to agree on that one.
Yeah.
But he said, I can't think of a single episode of his that I like. And then he caught himself and said, no, actually, I take that back. I liked Cold War. And I'll hold that one up as a good one, too. I definitely enjoyed Cold War. I think that's one of the best ones that he's contributed to the show.
The best one he's contributed to the show.
Okay. Yeah, everybody's got their take. We did have people on the far side of it. Mark emailed in to us and noted that, you know, in his consideration, he considers it a perfect little nugget of fun. You know, it's scary and it's idea-driven Doctor Who rather than something that is agenda-driven. You know, it's not a matter of forwarding an arc or anything. It's really taking a lot of chances. And if that's your interpretation of what is an enjoyable episode, great, then this is giving you the kind of stuff that you can really sink your teeth into, because it's very unpredictable as far as Doctor Who goes. The predictability might come from if you're trying to hold it up against other, you know, sci-fi or cinematic standards, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, I mean, are there good things to be gotten out of it? Sure. I enjoyed the thing between the Doctor and Claire at the very beginning. The interplay between them, did you take me to a space restaurant? And it's like, nobody says that. Nobody puts space in front of everything. Just that play back and forth between the two of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then again in the middle where they're arguing about naming things.
Yes.
No, I'm the Doctor. I do the naming.
I did want to bring that up, though. The line that he throws out, what was it?
Silurians all over again.
I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. What were they originally supposed to be called? Who named them? I want to know. Give me that story instead of this one.
Well, we did have an interesting little piece. This is something I wanted to kind of chew on a little bit. One of our listeners, Nick, who writes into us pretty regularly, said, you know, this episode was definitely not anything special, but I'm optimistic that it was just a rather convoluted backstory to set up a new monster that they're planning to do more with. I'm going to disagree with you on that one, Nick, but we'll get to
that. I'm fine not seeing the eye boogers again. Thanks. Yeah.
He said, I wish I could see the Sandmen going forward being something a bit more ominous now that the initial their what part is out of the way. But on the other hand, did they really need to create a new monster? Because in the big reveal, the planning, the intelligence, and the semi-incorporeal form makes them seem very similar, nice pull on this, to the Great Intelligence and or the Whisper Men, which he would still love to see more of too. And yeah, I don't think we're done dealing with the Great Intelligence. I think that was a phenomenal pull from Classic Who, and I'd love to see them, you know, the GI and the Whisper Men brought back down the road.
I tried really hard to pay attention every time I watched this, but, you know. So what happened when the Sandmen got a hold of you? Did they just, like, beat you up and kill you?
They never showed.
Okay.
Like, the only person we actually saw them get a hold of was Rasmussen, but the camera was shaking so much and it switched shots that you never actually saw anything that happened. It was just like, oh, they got a hold of him, and then the next thing we know, we hear someone say he's dead. So
yeah, so
and then we find out within like 15 seconds that he's actually not.
Yeah, see, that was part of my problems. I didn't feel any stakes because it didn't seem like the villain was all that dangerous. Like, you just shut a door on them and they fall apart.
Right, or up the or gravity.
Turn the gravity back on.
Yeah.
Nick wrapped up with one point, and this is something that I hadn't really considered, although the close of the episode kind of negates it a little bit. Just the only other thing I think might be an important takeaway from this episode is the fact that Clara is infected, which was kind of glossed over rather than in a blasé way. She's not even worried because, of course, the doctor is going to fix things, right? Mm-hmm. And next week's episode doesn't seem like it's a related story, which it isn't, as we've been getting so far this season. When things don't get fixed in the same serial in this episode, it's almost always part of a long game. But none of this ever really happened, did it? Did it?
That's the thing, is we don't know because it's been, I mean, it's all been so fabricated and whatnot, and there are parts missing or whatever. It's you can't even like come out of this and think, well, at least we can add this to the story for the series, because we don't even know.
I think because of that, it seals its own tint at that point. So, you know, it literally is a canned episode. So that, you know, anything that happened, you know, to our principal characters is kind of negated. Let's see. I know James wrote in. He started drifting away from the let's take it apart and try to understand it. He says he subjected himself to a second viewing because he must have missed something. He was like, just like the people we heard coming out of the screening room. He's like, I must have missed something. There's no way a show as bad as that was as bad as I thought it was. And on second viewing, his words, of course, not ours. On second viewing, it was even worse. And he asks, did any of that even happen? Were the Doctor and Clara even really there? Are we to assume that someone has hijacked the Doctor Who broadcast to just infect us with a mental virus? To what end? do we even care? And he leaves it kind of surprised that that episode even got the green light from Moffat. And he's choosing to pretend that it never happened. Okay, so yeah, there's some rough statements coming out of this. And I'm sure there are some more positive ones out there too. We tend to, you know, squeaky wheels tend to get the grease, so it's a matter of, you know, we tend to hear from the people that really didn't quite enjoy it. But I'm sure you don't have to look too hard to find some people that have done some pretty decent positive analysis of the episode, and this may be something that I take on as a personal agenda down the road. But I guess I don't hate the episode, and I don't even want to say that I don't necessarily not understand the episode. I just didn't like it. It just didn't really, I don't feel I gained anything from it, even as just fun. So, but that's just my personal interpretation, and I'm way off the point where I want to actually try to dispel anyone else from watching it. That's just not my place.
No, and that's the thing too, is it's the first time I watched it, I was upset. I was angry, and I was like, this is just absolutely horrible. I can't believe that, you know, I had to sit through and watch this kind of thing. And as the week has worn on and as it's gone on, I knew a second viewing was coming. I was just like, I don't even care. I don't want to watch it. I don't even have the energy to hate it anymore. It's just like, okay, fine. It's there. Do I really have to subject myself again? I don't even want to like think about it anymore. But we did get some more feedback though. It looks like Ben Rush on Facebook wrote to us and said, oh dear, I did think of you a lot after watching this. Just think of the good news. The next three episodes will be epic. Silver lining.
That's true. Well, next week in particular is going to be a real wild one. So Andy had written in and said that, you know, I understand they needed to save on budget and do a bit of a bottle episode, but this was so poor in comparison to last year's bank heist episode. That's an interesting strategy there. Looking at the time heist as their bottle episode for last season, I think still allowed us to gain a little bit more out of our principal characters. We definitely had a noted B story going on with our supporting cast on that one, you know, even to the point where they were debating whether we would see certain characters back as potential companions and things like that. So I think maybe as far as traditional storytelling, we got a little bit more out of that one last series. Yeah. Ray wrote in to say that maybe Moffat likes Gatiss's Doctor Who scripts because he wants to remind us that this is just a show. And it's not quite as important as we tend to take it. It's interesting statement, you know, rattle it up every once in a while to remind you people, you know, this is just a game. But he goes on to say, or just as likely, maybe Moffat just enjoys the annual sound of Whovian heads exploding. So, poof. Quite a few did.
Yeah, just a few. But I don't know. I think all in all, the general consensus about this is, well, that was an episode that exists, and now we can move forward and get to the good stuff.
I was really hoping this would be a good episode just because of the environment we were watching it in. I wanted something fun that we could all enjoy together, and this did not deliver.
Boo.
Boo.
Yeah, well, I was going to say huge thanks to Ken Deep and the team at LI Who for going above and beyond to make sure that we had got the Wi-Fi problems fixed and everything so that we could watch the episode. And then as I sat and watched it, I'm like, yeah, you're now my nemesis.
I'm not holding it against them. It's not their fault. It's not my fault.
They did do a great job getting two screening rooms together when the hotel Wi-Fi was trying to take a crap, and it was just, I mean, just fantastic job on their parts there.
That's very true. But we know going into next week, we've got quite a bit, I should say next week, within a day, you know, because we had the live cast that we wanted to get into your hands. We've got some interviews from LI Who that we're going to be dropping on you over the course of the next few days as little bonuses that'll be out there piecemeal. But we're closing in on episode 10, Face the Raven, of which we now know a lot more than we knew a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, quite a bit. It's exciting stuff.
Yeah. Do we want to do a little bit of, we don't have to get into this because I know because of the nature of this, we want to get this in everyone's hands. We can at least reference some information that's going to be in the news for the episode. We will make sure to include it along. We've been discussing some of this through the week, talking through folks on Twitter about it primarily, but it's good to have in there. So we'll just let you know all this news related stuff. Are we cool with this?
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. For those of you who have been trying to keep yourself from getting spoiled on a lot of things over the course of the last 7 days or so, you may have missed the fact that Radio Times was given an exclusive 60-second clip or so of Big Finish's pending production with Catherine Tate and David Tennant and their return to their roles as Tenth and Donna. So if you're looking for the Planet of the Boys, just follow Donna because that's all she wants to do. There's an infinite universe, all these civilizations. There's got to be a Planet of the Boys out there somewhere where they just dance all day long. So it's loads of fun. Make sure that you get it because they're right back into it. Tennant, after hearing him doing his his work on Broadchurch and then, you know, if any of you are starting to really salivate at Jessica Jones, when you hear him drop back into Tenth, it's magical.
Yeah, it really, really is. Because I'd gotten to the point, especially since I've got Kinect Sports for my Xbox, and he's the narrator through a lot of that. So it's like through a lot of different things, I've gotten used to hearing his Scottish accent, and it's become a natural thing. It's not jarring anymore. And then hearing this clip, I'm like, oh yeah, it's my doctor.
You get all warm and you hug your shoulders.
Exactly.
Well, we also have just a little bit of news from the Beebs in letting us know that the finale for this season is going to be an extended length. So you're going to get some extra time to be able to tell again. And that's an extended length to an episode that's going to be the conclusion of a two-parter. So you're getting a two-and-a-half-parter.
Sort
of. Two-and-a-quarter. But again, I think as we've been kind of agreeing throughout, if it takes that long to tell the story the way the story needs to be told, take all the time you need.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
It's not like we got anything else to do than stare at the screen.
Nope, nothing else coming up.
No. Because, obviously, with the news that, according to both Moffat and Capaldi, the change of companion that we know that we're headed for at some point, near future, gonna happen, is going to change the tone of the show. Their words. Question of when? Still TBD, unless you wanna watch, should be a certain broadcast coming out on the BBC this evening, a bit of a talk show, might have some news that we have to deal with, but we will see when Jenna Coleman's heart-wrenching exit is going to take place, and what that will mean for change of tone for the show, according to the gentleman sitting in the top seats. Other news that is newsworthy, of which you should take note of? Capaldi made a wish list.
Tom Hanks is going to be the new companion.
There's a snake in my TARDIS. Howdy, 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 howdy. But then again, he also said that, you know, along with Tom Hanks being on his list of individuals that he would love to be able to work with, which it wasn't, I don't think, his original idea. There was a producer that was like pushing him, go talk to him, talk to him. Would you like to be on my show? Tom Hanks replies, I'm very busy. Okay. He walks up. He said he's very busy. But I think first on his list was probably David Bowie.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he said that before. Yeah.
Which is so funny, because if you haven't been following anything going around from David Bowie's camp, you know, I happen to follow him on a couple different social networks. He dropped a 10-minute video for his pending album, and it's a song called Black Star, which looks like it could have been shot on Gallifrey. And it's just this long, very weird. I mean, Bowie's just, you know, as weird as he's ever been out there. He's come around the bend to be normal and then back to weird again. And it's this big sci-fi epic tune. It's great. People are saying that it's like the extension of what happened after Major Tom dies at the end of Space Oddity. It's just wild stuff. And you watch it and you're like, yeah, this, he could totally, totally work on Who. So enjoy that too. I might put it in there as like related material at the end of the post here.
Sounds good. That's all the news that we've got for this week. Yeah. So we're definitely looking forward to, you know, Face the Raven next week. It seems like it's really going to be an interesting episode. The return of Rigsy and things ramping up towards the conclusion of the series, and it, as well as the appearance of another character that we won't spoil, but it's very exciting.
Very exciting, yeah. Now, if you've been able to hide from the BBC news feed for the last couple of days, yeah, then you're protected in that. We won't ruin it for you much.
All right, well, this
it's
has
not
been...
River.
Aww.
No, that's a Christmas Aww. Present.
Whee!
Yay!
All right, well, this has been episode 162 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, God, I keep having to rub my eyes. What the heck is this in my eyes?
It's pink eye. The next week's Cynthia's pink eye. This is Kier saying, next week, space podcast.
Nobody puts space in front of it. And this is Haley saying, I did tell you not to listen.
That's very true.
We'll see you guys next week.
Amazing.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. We love getting feedback from listeners, so don't hesitate to share your thoughts with us. You can email us at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com, tell us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio, or on Facebook at facebook.com/GallifreyPublicRadio. You can also leave us a voicemail for inclusion in future shows at 210-802-1477. That's 210-802-1GPR. You should also go to GunnaGeek.com and check out lots of other high-quality geek-centric shows, or visit forums.GunnaGeek.com to talk about anything geeky with us or the community.
Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2015.